The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Plenty to get to in today's show. PSG dropped 6 in their Ligue 1 match. Plus, Barcelona, are they finally starting to turn it out under Ronald Koeman? We will discuss that. But with just 3 days left until the transfer window closes, we'll spend most of the show talking about moves that either have happened or may very well happen. For more on that, we welcome in Shaka Hislop, Gab Marcotti, and Julian Laurent. Gab, I'll start with you. Our website is calling what Manchester United is doing right now a frantic transfer chase. It's a bit sensationalist, but is it fair?
Look, I've said I'm withholding judgment until 11 p.m. Local time. On Monday, the 5th of October. That's when the transfer window shuts. I think that's when we can evaluate. If Manchester United's, and I've said this all along, if Manchester United's strategy is we have our top choices, we want to sign our top choices like Sancho or whatnot at a certain price. If we can't get them, we're in no hurry, but we won't be taken for a ride. We'll get them next year. And because we don't get them, because we still need to strengthen the squad, we have a bunch of short-term second choices, maybe older players, guys you get on short-term contracts who you bring in for a short-term boost, like they did, for example, with Igalo, like they did before with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, like they did back in the day with Laurent Blanc. And so that is the reason why they're waiting until the transfer window closing to get these guys at the right price, because there's so many teams that are trying to shed players right now. Then that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. Play one off against the other. Be clever. Get the useful bodies in, and that's fine. If, on the other hand, they find themselves in the situation because they've been unrealistic or sleeping through the market, and now all of a sudden Solskjaer's, you know, knocking at the door and saying, hey, I need a left back, I need this, I need that, then, of course, that would be an indictment. But let's wait and let's see. They have a right to have a go, and let's see where we are Monday night.
Jules, let's talk about this so-called strategy. Everybody knows their number one target is Jadon Sancho. Michael Zorc, the sporting director at Dortmund, has come out and said things are not likely to change in the next 3 days. We assume that means Manchester United are not going to get their number one target. So we go to plan B, which is apparently Ousmane Dembele of Barcelona. Manchester United want it as a loan. Barcelona want to sell the player. And according to your tweets, Paul Pogba is getting involved. Is this a chase or is this a scramble at this point for United?
It's everything for United right now. It's a chase, it's a scramble, it's a shamble, it's chaos. That's what they've been doing, not just this summer, but every single transfer window for the last, 7 years or so. But Dembele is an interesting one because he didn't really want to leave Barcelona, even if he could feel that the club were trying to sell him or loan him or get rid of him. And it's only when Paul Pogba had a few long chats with him earlier in the week that I think he convinced him to be open to the idea of maybe coming to Manchester United if the two clubs can find an agreement. And I think that's already a good thing for United. Now it's down to them to see what they can do with Barcelona. There's still a few rumors coming out of Spain saying like, well, you know, he can stay, but I think Dembele knows one, he's not going to play much. We saw against the Celta Vigo game on Thursday night that Ronald Koeman brought on Trincao and even Pedri, the young Spanish young youth international, ahead of Dembele for that game, for example, simply because he said, oh, well, yeah, but they tried back more, they defend a bit more, blah, blah, blah. So I think Dembele knows that this season might not be really good for him if he stays. That's why, as well, he's open to a move. And I think, in a way, for that right-winger position at United, he would fit really, really well there.
Shaka, what is your gut instinct here? Good idea or bad idea, Dembele to Manchester United, given his past and given what this club needs?
Listen, I still think Ousmane Dembele is an incredible talent. And if you can get him in, if you can negotiate a fee that's suitable to both, I would do this every single day of the week. And then it's up to Dembele to show that maybe he's turning the corner from what we thought, or a lot of the rumour and speculation around his off-the-field antics, showing up late for training and everything else that went along with that. But just in terms of pure talent, if you can get him focused, absolutely, this is a very good idea.
Gab, I have noted you shaking your head. You want to tell us why?
I think if you want to take a short-term gamble on Dembele, you know, the suggestions that they would take him on loan, but not on a permanent deal, take him on loan, test him out for a year. His contract is running down at Barcelona anyway. So, you know, if he's there and he's playing well and he's happy, you can certainly get him a contract and you kind of have to force Barcelona to sell at a price you want. But making a long-term commitment to Dembele when, you know, you're still pursuing Sancho, and Sancho was supposed to be the big guy, and if we don't get him now, we get him next summer and whatever else, to me makes very, very little sense. If you feel like you need a plan B, and I think they could use somebody in that position, there are other players that you can go for. I think the key is, if you're going to do this, do it short-term, do it alone, do it in a situation where you're giving yourself an out if it doesn't work.
All right, guys, let's turn our attention to Manchester United's next match, Sunday against Spurs. United actually even money favorites here, Spurs 3-1. Shaka, does that surprise you that United's such a heavy favorite going into this match?
Yes, given some of the performances we've seen from United so far, given the fact that Spurs, even if we want to question their style at sometimes, you can't question their results, certainly of late. We just have Gareth Bale. Features and to what extent. Right now, Spurs are trending upwards, whereas I think United are still clinging to the fact that they had a short pre-season. Those betting odds don't make much sense to me at all. I think Spurs are, what, 3-1, you see?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I think that's where the smart money is at.
Jules, Spurs in this match, certainly the team that comes in with momentum, yeah?
Yeah, certainly. You know, momentum after that win against Chelsea in the League Cup. We saw how much he meant to Jose Mourinho and Joao Sacramento, his assistant, when they went back into the dressing room after that penalty shootout. Listen, I think the fact that Spurs have played so many games pretty much the last 3 weeks, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, and Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday again. I think physically, fitness-wise, they might struggle a bit towards the end of that game on Sunday afternoon at Old Trafford, especially if the intensity is high from the beginning, if United put a lot of intensity again, but aggression as well, and make that game a game like that, then I think they might struggle for the last 20, 25 minutes. But apart from that, you could clearly see something good from Spurs in the last two games, and I haven't seen that from United. You know, the Crystal Palace game was dreadful, the Brighton game was really bad, even if they won, and then the Brighton game in the League Cup was very different because of all the rotations that both managers made. So I would tend to agree with Shaka in the sense that for me, the Spurs team is far more ready right now for a big game like this than United.
United Spurs on Sunday, Chelsea Crystal Palace on Saturday. Gab, Chelsea's defensive issues are well documented, certainly on this show. Crystal Palace has been playing well. How nervous should Chelsea fans be going into this matchup?
I think you should be nervous because like as we said, the recent results haven't been great. There's been a lot of change at the back, a lot of mixing and matching. On paper, you know, you look at Christensen against Zaha and whatnot, you know, that looks like a little bit of a mismatch, given that you expect Crystal Palace to sit and play on the break and Chelsea try to move the ball around. Now, that said, Chelsea, you know, there is an evident quality gap here, so you still expect Chelsea to win, but this is not a game you want to take lightly. And I think it's a big game for Lampard as well, because I think, you know, some of the honeymoon is sort of starting to wear off a little bit because he's got a big squad and it's really difficult to keep everybody happy.
Shaka, last week you were the one person that said they should wait a little bit, Chelsea, on Edouard Mendy, giving him the start. Now the time, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Featured in the cup game for them. I thought it was a decent debut, as I mentioned right after. Dealt with just about everything that came to him. As well as you'd expect. I certainly remember one cross where he came in flat, but I don't read too much into that. And given the uncertainty around Kepa, given the fact that, as I've said before, I don't see Willy Caballero as being any more than a number two at best, you threw Mendy in at the deep end, and now is the perfect time to do that.
Elsewhere on Saturday, Manchester City and Leeds, we got Pep versus Bielsa. Jules, a neutral's dream and probably a good spot to take the over.
or massively. And if you heard Pep Guardiola today in his press conference, he was so, I mean, so in love with Marcelo Bielsa, saying how much he admires him as a manager, but as a man, you know, that how much of an inspiration he was for him, how what a true manager he was, in the sense that he, you know, he always wanted his teams to play the same way, always entertaining, attacking football. It was really great. I thought what Guardiola had to say about Bielsa, you're really looking forward to it. And also, you know, the fact that Leeds had a whole week to prepare for that game, to push things in place, maybe defensively, for example, to try to counter City when City had to play in midweek again in the League Cup, after the Leicester humiliation as well at home. There's so much that have happened really since that Leicester game until the game on Saturday, and it's just, I think it's fantastic. It's going to be a hell of a spectacle, and I think it's hard to predict what's going to happen, because yes, you could see a lot of goals being scored. I think we're pretty safe to say that, but who will have the final word? It's fascinating.
Jules, Gab, Shaka, thank you very much. Here's a look at the rest of the Premier League's weekend schedule for you. Saturday, another key matchup. Keep an eye on Everton hosting Brighton, and another couple big games on Sunday. Liverpool taking on Aston Villa, and Arsenal and Sheffield United. Make it a fourth straight win in league play for PSG as they smash Angers 6-1 on Friday. Neymar with a brace. Kylian Mbappe with a beautiful assist to goal as well. All should be well in Paris, but it is not. For more, we welcome in, welcome back, I should say, Shaka, Gab, and Jules. Jules, the real fireworks in this one, apparently after the match. What has Leonardo gone and said now?
Well, he responded to the comments that Thomas Tuchel made yesterday, the day before the game, during his press conference, saying, basically criticizing the poor transfer window done by the club so far, saying that he needed more players, that he lost a few players, a few bodies, which is true. If you think about Thiago Silva and Meunier and Vincent Cavani, plus the youngsters like Kwasi and others. And you kind of, you knew that Leonardo at some point would respond. You didn't know how, but well, my word, he did that exactly after the game tonight, saying that I didn't understand the comments made by Tuchel. I didn't accept them either. The club didn't like them too. If he stays, and if he decided to stay, which is the case, he has to go along with the decision that I made, basically. And we knew there was a lot of tensions before. We knew that. Let's not forget that Thomas Tuchel is not Leonardo's man at all. He was appointed by Leonardo's predecessor at the club, Antero Henrique. And you knew that they were never that close. But to get that tension right now is not a good thing at all. And you know it's not the end of it either.
Jules, obviously there's pressure on Tuchel, but we should also look at the results recently. As I mentioned, now four straight wins in the league. Compare that to the first two matches of the season, which were absolutely brutal. There has been at least somewhat of a turnaround.
Yeah, some progression, of course, but you expected that. The first two games were freak games in many respects. The defeat at Lens first, when he had seven players out because they tested positive for the coronavirus. He had other players injured. There was no preseason. He came very quickly after the Champions League final and the defeat against Bayern Munich, then the defeat against Marseille at home with all the incidents that we know. And again, a game that they could have or should have won even. And after that, it got better. But it got better in that third game against Metz at the Parc des Princes when they won in the 95th minute when Draxler scored. Had they not won that game, Thomas Tuchel might have been sacked that same night. So you're right, they've won four in a row now. It's looking much better. All the big stars are coming back, although Di Maria was suspended tonight because of his spit in the Classic. But that tension that was there in the Mets game after the two initial defeats is still very much there. And I think Thomas Tuchel knows that Max Allegri and Mauricio Pochettino are there waiting. It's a club that they would accept the job. They would take over him. And I think he knows that he can't afford many mistakes in the league or in the Champions League at any time this season. Not now, not in December, not in February, or even later in the season, because if he does, then he knows he will be gone.
Gab, does Tuchel have a point here? I mean, this is a guy who's come out and effectively said, if we don't improve this team, you're going to have to lower the expectations of what we accomplished last year. Is it fair?
I think it's definitely a fair thing to say, but I think you have to know how to say it and when to say it. I'm a little bit surprised, and I think that Leonardo would come out so strongly afterwards. Because I don't necessarily, you know, Leo is the kind of guy who often likes to avoid confrontation unless he's almost ready to cut you loose. And certainly that's kind of my reading of the situation here, where all of a sudden as Jules just alluded to there, he's got two guys lined up to come in, two guys that he knows very well in Pochettino and Max Allegri. And so he is in a position where he can say my way or the highway. And I think more broadly, and I think up the food chain at Paris Saint-Germain as well, with obviously the issues going on with the ownership, I think Leonardo in some ways is much more in charge, much more involved day to day than somebody would have been, or I should say has more power day to day than we've seen in the past when perhaps, you know, Nasser was there kind of on a daily basis and was talking to the players privately. I'm sure he still talks to Neymar privately, but possibly not Tuchel. So I think is a very, very strong statement and you know, maybe some foreshadowing in there unless Tuchel goes on a run.
All right, from PSG, let's turn our attention to Barcelona. And my, how quickly things can change. Remember just a couple weeks ago, the Catalan papers were all in a panic. Well, here are the headlines after the 3-0 win away against Celta Vigo. Sport calling the performance a storm by Lionel Messi and company. Mundo Deportivo using words like magic and brilliant. Okay, so I'm watching this game yesterday, and immediately after it finishes, I get a text, guys, from my buddy, the friend of mine who is the biggest Barcelona fan I know. And he tells me that there is no chance that last year's Barcelona would have gone a man down in a monsoon and then been able to easily win away at Celta. Xhaka, are we already starting to see improvement, real improvement, under Ronald Koeman from last year's team?
Yes, but it's early days. Listen, there's a long way to go between not just now and the end of the season, but now and when this league kind of kicks into gear and everybody starts finding their true selves. But given the disappointments of Barcelona last season, not just in terms of results, but in terms of performances, what you've seen this season, and in particular what we maybe expected, given some of the negative headlines around Koeman and around everything that was happening with Barcelona, including Lionel Messi, this is exactly the start you want, you know. And as much as we're willing to read into it, of course, it has to be with the caveat that we're just two games in, but That's all we have to go on. And what we have to go on has been very impressive.
Gab, if you look at this Barcelona team, of course, the big worries were about the defense. They have yet to concede this season. We should also note they haven't had Ter Stegen in goal, so even more impressive there. Should we start to give Koeman some credit? Because a couple weeks ago, we were very critical of his handling of issues off the field. The phone call to Luis Suarez, it was far too short. On the field, though, so far, so good.
Look, I think off the field, in some ways, you know, Koeman can't win. He can either make things a lot worse or he can either just make things worse. You know, when you think of things like the phone call to Luis Suarez, however long it was, you know, what's he going to do? He's still going to have a certain number of people who believe that letting Suarez go is wrong be against him. So I kind of want to give him a pass for that part. What I've seen on the pitch, yeah, the scores are very evident, but I'm going to withhold judgment again until I see more because, you know, opening day, I just thought Villarreal just simply didn't show up at all. You know, 4-0 up at halftime, defensive mistakes, and it was easy for Barcelona to pick them off. Against Celta, again, difficult conditions, but let's face it, freak conditions, you know, going a man down, the weather conditions. So I still need to see Barcelona play before I kind of, you know, in normal conditions against normal opponents who perform well, to see how they do, to see how these pieces fit together. You know, it's two matches in, like you said. Let's wait and let's see. After everything they've been so far, I think we owe it to them to wait, you know, until November to start making our mind up about how the season's going to unfold.
If there is one piece that maybe hasn't quite perfectly fit yet, it's Antoine Griezmann. Jules, this is made even more frustrating, I think, for folks that want to see Griezmann succeed, for the fact that when Koeman came in, he said, we know this guy's position and we're going to put him there. Yet against Celta, we see it again. He's an odd fit. And when the red card comes, he's the one sacrificed after 45 minutes.
That's right. And I would go even further than that, in the sense that Ronald Koeman had a conversation, a very, very serious, quite strong conversation with Antoine Griezmann to reassure him, to say that, don't worry, I'm here now. I will play you in your best position because I want to get the best out of you. And I don't know if Koeman was saying that, thinking that Leo Messi would go, because that was right at the time where where Messi said he wanted to go and he was trying to leave the club. I don't know if Koeman lied to Griezmann just to keep him and to keep his spirits high, maybe. I don't know. But the fact is, he's not doing it. I don't care what Koeman can say now, but he's not playing Griezmann in his best position to get the best out of him. He's playing wide, basically just in the last position that he could put him in and see what happens. And then, as you said, he took him off after 45 minutes to bring on another centre-back, which I can understand, but it just doesn't look good. I don't think Antoine is enjoying his football at all. I think he will see the international break once again as a breath of fresh air, coming home, seeing his mate of the national team, having those games with France where he can pick up a bit of confidence, a bit of momentum, and then go back to Barcelona and trying to do the best he can. Because again, you know, I'm happy to criticize him, but when you don't play in your position, I think it's hard, especially in a team like this with a new manager. It's hard for you to be the best version of yourself. You know, this is a no-brainer. If you'd play Xhaka as a left-back when he was a player, he would have been rubbish. I mean, it's very simple. So I have to say, I will always defend him, of course, but I think people need to understand that it's not easy in that team, especially offensively, when you play on that right-hand side like we've seen him in those two games.
Xhaka as a left back, what a visual. Speaking of visuals, Barcelona adding to their squad, Sergiño Dest. The visual that people are focused on, or at least one person is focused on, our very own resident hater, Gab Marcotti, is the visual of Dest trying to juggle at his presentation. Now, obviously it didn't go very, very well. If you cut up the highlights wrong, he did pull off the trick eventually. Gab, he says his role model is Dani Alves. At least by the presentation, didn't quite look like it.
No, and look, I mean, I made this point on social media. I know it's a wonderful retro thing, and it goes back to the 80s and Diego Maradona's presentation in Naples. If you get a chance to see it on YouTube, it specially juggles the ball and people love it. But you know what? It's not written in stone that everybody needs to go do this. It's got nothing to do with actual playing football and being good at what you do. There are players who are really not good at keepy-uppies and who look silly, but are phenomenal footballers. And maybe Sergiño, I mean, certainly local report says, oh, I love tricks, I practice them all the time. I don't know, maybe it was nerves or whatever, but what I wonder is, why set yourself up for this? Why set him up for this? We know how harsh the Catalan media can be. This is a young player, and you're going out and you're putting himself in a position where, you know, he can needlessly make himself look silly on social media. And that is exactly what happened. I know people were so impressed with the other trick that he did later by the touchline. You know what? That other trick, I think there was a fair element of good fortune involved in that.
Oh,
I like
okay.
to think Bye. The real Sergiño is somewhere in between. Frankly, I don't care. You know, there's freestylers who could make any of these guys look like Muppets. I just want to see Sergiño play and perform, and that's what he's going to be judged on, not the keepy-uppies for better or for worse. Just leave that to one side, because that's nonsense.
Let's talk about that performance and his role at Barcelona. Right now, Jules, the rhetoric is kind of, let's be patient with this guy, let's not rush him in. But if you ask any Barcelona fan, Sergi Roberto at right back has been, at best, an uncomfortable fit for a long while. They've been trying to move past this guy. How long should it really take for Dest to win this job?
I mean, it's hard if you're not there every day at training, see what he's doing, see if he can understand your methods, the way you want to play, exactly what you want, what you're asking him to do. Of course, you know, for us, we've seen him in the Champions League, in the Eredivisie as well. We know that he's very talented. We know what kind of fullback he is, very attacking fullback. And on paper, it looks like this is perfect for Barcelona. It's perfect for this Barcelona team. He's dependent of Jordi Alba on the other side. You know, he could make intelligent runs. He could work well with whoever plays above him on that right hand side. But then there's a difference between what looks good on paper and what he can do at training. So maybe Koeman will think, you know what, he needs a bit more time. I think Koeman knows him really well. And maybe Koeman will think, you know what, he's ready to come in and play this weekend, for example. So it's hard to judge when you don't see him at training. He's had a couple of training sessions already that apparently went quite well. So let's see. I would hope that a young player like him who is ready to learn and ready to work hard could do that very, very quickly and could integrate that, that dressing room and that team very quickly and play and be good. And he will have Frankie de Jong helping him a lot. So plus Ronald Koeman, of course, and his brother as well. So I think there's everything in place for him to do well very quickly. However, again, we need to see his form at training. And by the way, just on the KPI piece, we saw Ferland Mendy, after he signed for Real Madrid last year, also struggling at the Bernabeu with his presentation and the KPI piece. And then he had a very good season. So, hey.
Well, maybe we can analyze a proper match this weekend. And Barcelona will, Shaq, it seems like, get a proper test, or at least their stiffest one yet, as they face Sevilla.
Yeah, they will. And I'm looking forward to see how Barcelona do. And as we were saying before, given all the criticism that swirled around Barcelona and every aspect of it, and as good as the start has been, they need this test. Because I think results have a way of either highlighting your flaws, or certainly what we've seen so far, maybe perceptions are better than the reality. So if Sevilla do show up, this will be a real test. And we see exactly how good the good this Barcelona team is, whether to your point of your previous question, whether they are players that will find themselves out of the starting lineup, Sergio Roberto looking nervously over his shoulder. But then results and wins in particular have a way of keeping you in the team. And that's the challenge, is it? Or is it a beauty for Koeman right now? If you want to bring players in, how do you change a winning team? Barcelona need these tests to see exactly where they are, to say exactly what needs to be done, who needs to come in, who needs to go out. As we've said before, hopefully they get that this weekend, and everybody knows a whole lot more.
Gab, it figures to be their toughest test so far of the season. That's not really saying a whole lot. Do you feel like this squad, based on what you've seen, is ready for it?
Like I said, I don't know how much we could really learn from the first two games, other than the fact that they got the job done. Sevilla, obviously a much better test, much better in terms of quality, much better manager, I think, as well. Julian Lopetegui is going to cook something up, and it's going to be up to Koeman to counter it. And, I think this is where we'll start getting a sense also of how Koeman wants to play. I agree with what the boy said. You know, Sergio Roberto at right back, the guy's still a midfielder playing right back, and it's going to be very, very different when Sergiño Dest is ready, and it may not be this weekend, when you've got somebody like that, when you've got the balance of the two attacking fullbacks on the two sides. Then we start to see where Koeman's heading. For now, you know, Koeman's still kind of playing with a piece of clay, trying to mold it into what he wants to do, and of course at the same time having the pressure to get results.
Jules, we should mention Langley out as well, his red card upheld. That's a one area of the field if you're going up against Sevilla and you're Barcelona. If you're Barcelona and you're going up against anyone, you can't really afford to have somebody out.
No, that's right, and especially when you look on the bench then, or the options that you have, and no offense to Ronald Araujo, but I don't think he's at the level of Clément Lenglet. Then you've got Umtiti, who they wanted to get rid of all summer, who has one knee left, let's be honest, and I don't think he's ready to play in a game like this at all. So it's not ideal, especially when you go against a team like Sevilla with so much confidence, so much momentum, whether it's Luke de Jong starting, and Neziri, whoever plays up front, you know it's going to be a tough game. You'll have Lucas Ocampos on one side, and that's why maybe it's not a good idea to start Sergiño Dest for his debut in La Liga in a game like this against Ocampos, and then on the other side as well. So it would be tricky, and defensively, as Gab just said, they would be tested maybe for the first time, because neither Villarreal or Celta Vigo really gave them a test. I think the test will come this weekend, and we will see really, especially defensively, if the team is balanced, if for example they can defend against two very attacking fullbacks, and it'd be very interesting on that level.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. The boys will be back for today's edition of Extra Time, including Gab defending himself against accusations that he can't take a penalty.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Gab Marcotti back with us for a look ahead to the weekend in Serie A. Gab, two huge matches on Sunday. Let's start with Juventus and Napoli. Another stiff test for Andrea Pirlo and company against a Napoli team that is playing really well so far this season.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly the rumors coming out of Turin are that maybe Pirlo got a little bit carried away against Roma, that we are going to see some changes. You know, we saw Kulusevski in that wing-back position, didn't quite work out as planned. Also, you know, they were defending very high up the pitch. It's extremely, extremely risky against, you know, when you're facing the likes of Osimhen, of Dries Mertens, of Insigne, possibly your boy Chucky Lozano as well at some point. So I think a lot of people expect Pirlo to make some adjustments, go with perhaps a slightly more orthodox set of wingbacks. But from Napoli's perspective, they're flying, they're surpassing expectations. Lino Gattuso says he wasn't happy, even though they scored six goals at the weekend. He saw some things he didn't like. But I think he knows full well that certainly attacking-wise, they have a really, really strong set of players.
I was waiting to see if you would mention Chucky Lozano. You did, so you passed the test. Elsewhere on Sunday, Lazio and Inter. Lazio getting killed by Atalanta 4-1. Inter, though, have shown some weaknesses defensively. What do we expect in this match?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it's weird because, you know, Lazio got, I mean, they got road graded by Atalanta, but they didn't really play that badly, actually, for long stretches of the game. And in fact, you know, for them, it's a bit of a weird summer because, of course, they hung on to many of their stars. And, you know, a lot of people were expecting them to kick on a little bit. So, you know, they're taking on an Inter side, which, of course, looked devastating. But then again, that was against Benevento. And I think, to me, what's going to be interesting is we've certainly had the impression thus far from Conte, he's hinted at as well, that we're going to see a lot of rotation because he likes his intensity. He's going to rotate his wing backs, probably see some changes in central midfield as well. I think that's great when you decide to engage in some load management and spread the minutes around. But, you know, you have to be very careful that, you know, you pick the right combinations for that game. Now, in certain matches, as we've seen, it doesn't matter that much because you've got five subs in Italy and you can send on the cavalry from the bench. But I think in other games against a team like Lazio, who can punish you on the counter and punish you and keep the ball in different ways, I think it's important to get it right from the start. So I think Inter obviously favorites in this game, but I think it's one of those games where pretty much anything can happen. Really, really difficult, I think, to predict the script.
Thanks, Gab. And one more quick look at the Serie A schedule for the weekend. The television game, Atalanta and Cagliari, 6:30 a.m. Sunday on ESPN2. Always watch Atalanta and the rest of those matches available for you on ESPN+. For more on the Bundesliga, we welcome back Julien Laurent and Gab Marcotti. Gab, let's start with Bayern Munich. They play Sunday against Hertha Berlin. You almost feel bad for Hertha here. You hate to be the team that plays Bayern after they not just lose but get shellacked by Hoffenheim.
You figure Bayern's going to be annoyed, but I think they have to be a little bit careful against Hertha Berlin. Obviously, Hertha starting the season well. They've spent a little bit of money. They've got a little bit of drive. They've got a very ambitious owner in Lars Windhorst. They want to make Hertha a big city club. And I'll tell you what, the prospect of facing what might be a wounded Bayern, a Bayern that's looking out to the last few hours of the transfer window for some relief, a Bayern that, you know, maybe without Leon Goretzka as well in the middle of the park, you know, that's pretty tasty there for them. So I think this is going to be a big-time game on a big-time stage.
Bayern in action on Sunday. On Saturday, we got Borussia Dortmund and Freiburg. Of course, Jules, last week Dortmund lost and lost badly to Augsburg. They were just straight up bullied. Who are we evaluating more in this match? Lucien Favre, his ability to get a reaction out of his young players, or the young players themselves and their ability to respond?
Both, I think, Sebi, and we saw a bit of a reaction on Wednesday night in the Super Cup against Bayern Munich, where they fell behind, they came back in the game. I think they lost the game more than Bayern won it in the end because they made a bad mistake, and Joshua Kimmich, with a lot of luck, if you want, or success, scored the winning goal. But I think it was much better from what we saw, you know, from from Borussia Dortmund and some of the young players, because the others, some others were on the bench. The issue I have, I mean, it's not the issue, but this is still a team that in those kind of games, Freiburg, Augsburg, still struggle with the fact that they can have a lot of the ball, but sometimes can't find the answers or can't break the deadlock of that defense and then get exposed too much defensively on the counter, especially on set pieces. It's still the same issues, the same problems. I'm a big Lucien Favre fan, as Gab knows. Gab isn't so much. But I still think that Favre has to sort this out, because it would be exactly the same pattern in the game on Saturday against Freiburg than it was last weekend. And it would be good to see if this time they've sorted out those fragilities defensively that they can have, that they've had already this season, that they had last season, and even in the season before when Favre just arrives.
Elsewhere Saturday, we've got Leipzig and Schalke. Gab, nowhere to go but up for Schalke?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, you know, given what happened as well with the manager, they're looking for a bounce back. And in some ways, Leipzig are not the kind of team you want to be playing in those situations, because you know what they're going to get, what you're going to get from a Nagelsmann team in terms of intensity, in terms of drive. I'd be curious to see whether, you know, we get to see Sorloth in this game up front for Leipzig. My guess, maybe possibly off the bench. And you know, if you're Schalke, you need a reaction, because there's so much pressure on you from the fans. Nobody likes to see a managerial change early in the season in these conditions. But you know, you have to soldier on. You're in a situation where you're paying for mistakes that were made in years past. That's why your budget is so tight, and it's obviously made worse by the pandemic. And they're really hurting now, and they're gonna have to look within them. And the turnaround comes at Schalke. I'm not sure it's coming this weekend against Leipzig.
All right, thanks, guys. Here's a quick look at the Bundesliga slate for the weekend. A reminder, all those matches for you on ESPN+. Plus, once again, the defending champions, Bayern Munich, facing Hertha Berlin on Sunday.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tata Martino and the Mexican national team back in action next Wednesday in Amsterdam against the Netherlands. Should be a pretty stiff test, and a match you can watch on ESPN2. Coverage starts 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. Speaking of Mexico, and indeed CONCACAF, we welcome in Hercules Gomez to the show. Herc, Mexico played Guatemala, got a 3-0 win, and afterwards we found out that a group of 26 players that'll go to Europe for a couple friendlies under Tata Martino. The biggest surprise is one name that wasn't on the list, Javier Chicharito Hernandez. Now I'm going to ask you, because some people, they just tune into the Mexican national team every few years, they remember at the World Cup he was one of Mexico's star players in Russia. Was it a surprise to you, though, that Chicharito was left out?
No, not at all. Seb, how you doing? I can't say I was surprised Javier Hernandez was left out. You're talking about... I'm actually surprised a lot of players were included in this match. There's no need to see the likes of Javier Hernandez or Raul Jimenez. You know what these players are going to bring. I was more interested in seeing what a player like JJ Macias can do, Henry Martin, maybe Alexis Vega, these type of players, these type of young players that could potentially overtake some of these players. I mean, Javier Hernandez, right now at this stage of his career, 3 World Cups, Champions League, Premier League titles, whatever you want. What can he honestly prove? I think more than anything, you want to see what the next generation, what that next crop is looking like. And his current form has left a lot to be desired. So no, it wasn't a surprise at all that Javier Hernandez was not in this list.
You look at the guys that are competing for that position. Look, Raul Jimenez is the number one. Then after that, you've got some names that I think you can pick at. Alan Pulido gets a call up, Henry Martin. Look, if Chicharito is behind those guys, and he's 32 right now, he's going to be 34 at the next World Cup, is he done with the national team?
You think he's behind those guys right now? I'd say if the World Cup was tomorrow, Javier Hernandez would be on that flight. He'd be on that plane. He'd be with that team. Listen, you can't discredit what a player like Javier Hernandez brings to the table when he's in form. And we know how streaky Javier Hernandez is. It takes that first goal. It takes that first one to become two, three, four, five. If you can get him in rhythm, get him on a roll, there is nobody better in the Mexican national team at scoring. Raul Jimenez brings a different dimension to this Mexican national team. I think he's the clear-cut nine. The way that Tata wants to play, everything that he can provide, that's his place to lose. But if you look at below him, there's a reason why all of a sudden, you know, Rogelio Funes Mori, his name about circling about in, you know, Mexican press, because there aren't a lot of clear-cut strikers in Liga MX or around the world that could potentially go in there and stake claim. That's why a guy like Javier Hernandez, despite his age, despite where he's playing and how he's playing, will always be on that list.
He may be on that list for the national team, but what about with the LA Galaxy? This is a player that, forget the Galaxy, this is a player that Major League Soccer, like a holy grail, went after for years and years and years. They finally land him. And I heard what you said on this show a couple days ago. You said Guillermo Barros Schelotto has a decision to make. I mean, forget the national team, Herc. Are we at a place where we're talking about Chicharito getting benched in MLS?
Maybe. Maybe, and I'd argue it's circumstantial. I know people don't want to hear that, but the guy was out for almost 3 months with an injury. He's coming back in a situation where you're playing, what, every 3 to 4 days, where they're clearly not playing well, where he's being the scapegoat for a lot, and myself included have named one of the reasons that they've been struggling. The only way he can get that match fitness, that game sharpness, is by playing. The problem here is when he plays, the Galaxy aren't any good. The Galaxy not only aren't any good, they're winless. They don't score goals. It seems like there's a frustration level when you watch Javier Hernandez play. Not only that, I've mentioned the disconnect between the two best players on that team, Javier Hernandez and Cristian Pavón. Cristian Pavón is an elite talent in this league, an elite talent at any level. That's why he's playing for the Argentine national team. That's why he's played in a World Cup for Argentina. But when he's on the field with Javier, they have yet to really make that click. That chemistry is not there. And there's clear frustration out of both of them. Right now, LA Galaxy, and it's not me saying that, it's the numbers. When Ethan Zubek plays, despite his lack of goal scoring, he offers different things. He offers a different facet of the game that's better to the team. Javier Hernandez is important to the Galaxy, important to the league. But if Javier Hernandez, and I've always said this, isn't scoring goals for you, he's not doing much else. He needs to score goals. So if he's not doing that right now, Guillermo Barros Schelotto has a big decision to make. Do I ride it out until he gets sharp enough? Can I withstand that? Are there enough games to make up? Or do I pull the trigger and go with Ethan Zubak or somebody else who can give me that maybe game fitness that I desperately need to play the way that we were playing before?
Herc, let's stick with Mexican national teamers, but turn our attention to Chucky Lozano. And I, oh man, you know I hate this. I got to give you credit here. For months, I was on the train. You've got to get Chucky out of Napoli. The relationship with Gattuso was broken. It was never going to work there. But you said he should stick it out. And look at what's happened in the first couple games of this season. He's not just starting. He is scoring. This is a huge turnaround for Lozano.
Paciencia. Take it easy, my friend. Relax.
No, I don't have it.
I preach patience with players like Chucky Lozano. I know Chucky Lozano. When I was at Pachuca, he was a young kid coming up through the ranks. Nobody ever questioned his talent. It was evident. Kid has blazing speed. He's very technical. He's got a nose for goal. He's brash. He's brave in the final third. But it's always been about attitude. We saw it at Pachuca, where a lot of his colleagues in Liga MX would take constant shots at him. He was one of the most fouled players. And it wasn't because he was fast. It wasn't because of his on-the-field level. It was because the kid has a bit of a chip on his shoulder and he likes to talk a lot and he's got a bit of a personality issue when it comes to those type of things. We saw his ruffling of the feathers when he was in Holland. I am telling you right now, this is good for him. He can't always be treated like the most important player in the organization. There are going to be times when he realizes he's not. How do you deal with that adversity? This is good for him. And if it's good for him, it's good for the Mexican national team. He is an elite talent, I firmly believe. But he's one of these guys that has bought into it and bought into it early. He needs to himself think, this isn't the way I need to work to get myself out of these type of situations. And Gattuso, you have to give Gennaro Gattuso a ton of credit. He was, at one point, the team's highest transfer fee in their history. A lot of pressure on him. I tip my hat to Gattuso on what he's done and to Chucky Lozano for responding the way he has. It's been a few games, but they're promising.
Herc, we just had Milan Van Donken on to give us some perspective on Sergiño Dest. Everybody's talking about the move from Ajax to Barcelona. I know a lot of our colleagues on ESPN Deportes and down in Mexico are focused on it as well. I wonder if you can categorize the reaction, because there's a truth happening here. Young American prospects are having a lot of success in Europe, and young Mexican prospects, the few that are there, are very much stagnating.
Yeah, but Mexico closes its own doors. It's a reality.
But that doesn't change the fact, Herc, that the U.S. has a lot of young, talented players. Mexico doesn't have a lot of young, talented players. And that's the discussion in CONCACAF. It's U.S. versus Mexico.
Yeah, but why does the U.S. have so many players besides them being talented players? They have they were born in different countries. They have European passports. You know, they're son of immigrants, naturalized citizens. You know, all these different things going around. They're allowed to leave the academy systems in MLS. They're encouraged to sell these players or to see them off. And in Mexico, you know what that's like? Rodolfo Pizarro, at 26 years old, was valued $20 million to a team in La Liga. These La Liga teams are saying, what? 26 years old, $20 million for a player who's not really played with the national team, a Mexican player? No, we don't want that. We can go off and get five different players for that kind of money who are younger with more upside. Mexico closes their own doors. There is plenty of talent in Mexico. Nobody is denying the pipeline, the talent that is in Mexico. I've been there. I've seen these Fuerzas Básicas, these academies. The talent level is elite, especially at a world's level. Don't take my word for it. Look at the U-17 World Cups they've won. They have players, for whatever reason, at U-17. It's not for whatever reason. It's because they do things correct way when they are in these academy systems. They are taught the proper way of playing the game. They have elite talent. But then these ownership groups, but then the federation, but then whatever reason you might want to put in here, we have too many foreigners in the league. It's too hard for these players to get a fair shake. These limitations that they put on themselves, they go against them. It is what it is. Mexico is starting to see that the U.S., the neighbor up north, all of a sudden has players at Chelsea, at Leipzig, at City, at Bayern Munich. You know, at Barcelona, they have two players. And they're starting to say, hold on a second. Before they were telling us, watch out for MLS, and we would laugh. Well, what about CONCACAF Champions League? Now they're telling us, watch out at the national team level. What can we say when their best players, not even their best players, when their young players are rubbing elbows, they're rubbing shoulders, they're sharpening their irons with the world's elite, and our players aren't leaving. They're choosing to go to MLS. There's been a lot of, I don't want to say head scratching, but doubting amongst themselves in what is the Mexican press.
Thank you very much, Herc. Speaking of Major League Soccer, MLS returns to your ESPN Plus screens on Saturday. 10 matches for you to choose from. Don't miss a single one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, that's all the time for this edition of ESPN FC. Thank you so much for watching. Right now, it's extra time. We got Shaka, we got Gab, and we got Jules. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC studios for this Friday edition of Extra Time. We've got your questions straight off of Twitter, a nice even 10-pack of them, and we've got a trio of good guys to take hold of them. Shaka Hislop, plus the two stars of the Gab and Jules podcast, Gab Marcotti, Julian Laurent, and Shaka, I don't think they've invited you on the pod yet, just saying. Jules, first question, will PSG make any sort of signings during the remaining days of the transfer window? Being a PSG fan during transfer windows is so stressful, says Shaquille. Please give me some good news. Of course, PSG 6-1 winners today, but do they need help?
But yeah, of course they do, and I think he's been a disappointing transfer window, really, let's be honest. I think Leonardo's main target, main mission was to sell players, and he failed badly because they will never get close to the 60 million euros really that they should have got in to balance their books properly, and they were even far from that. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that they never really got the target they wanted. Mauro Icardi was one, but that was done a long time ago and that was easy. But for the rest, for the defensive midfielder they've been chasing, so far it doesn't look likely, and it might change, but it doesn't look likely. The right back, I don't think any of us expected. Florenzi scored a great goal today. He's a great guy. I love him already, but I'm not sure about his fitness or his consistency, especially defensively, going forward in the season. And even at centre back, even at left back, with the injury of Bernard as a striker, let's not forget they lost Thiago Silva, they lost Edinson Cavani, they lost people like Choupo-Moting, they lost Thomas Meunier. And that's a lot of bodies that you lost. And for just Florenzi and Icardi, who was already there, coming in, it's very thin. And I just don't think he was a good transfer window at all. And I'm afraid, Shaquille, I don't think there'll be many more coming up.
Very well. One of our next questions. Who is more under more pressure in Sunday's game between Manchester United and Spurs? Is it Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Jose Mourinho? Gab, you want to take this one?
I think it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I mean, I think the reality is Jose Mourinho signed a contract with Spurs, which is so enormous that it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to let him go. So if you look at the way Spurs finished last season, if you look at the fact that, you know, that I know it's only the League Cup, but they did knock out a strong Chelsea side, and you know, they got the job done in the Europa League. And, you know, once you're Mourinho, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I don't think United have any plans to get rid of Solskjaer from that sense, but there's obviously a ton of pressure on United. And when you're the United manager, you bear that brunt. I thought it was strong words today from him, you know, relating to their transfer activities or lack thereof this summer. But I think the fact of the matter is, you know, United are under pressure to finish top four. And the minute they start thinking that this might not happen this season for whatever reason, you know, people will point fingers at Solskjaer. So while I think they're both relatively secure for the time being, I would lean towards Solskjaer simply because he's more expendable.
Shaka, you agree Solskjaer under more pressure on Sunday?
Yeah, I do. I will say, though, that despite Mourinho's contract at Spurs, I mean, he mightn't be under pressure to lose his job, but I think that there's a certain amount of pressure by way of turning results around and getting performances. We'll see how Gareth Bale fits into that bigger picture for Jose Mourinho. But largely, without question, the pressure's on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or more to the point, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Woodward, given how poor this transfer window has been for them. And we are talking about a team that finished third last season, and Ole made sure to highlight that as much as he could between then and now. If performances and results don't improve, if we don't see United challenging at the top end of the table and very soon, he's going to run out of runway with that excuse of it being a short preseason, and he'll find himself under a lot of heat.
Gab, not sure if you caught yesterday.
Sorry, Sebi.
Go ahead.
No, just to add to this, I mean, if you're talking about Sunday, I mean, far be it for me to play Jose's big defender and get my excuses in for him, but come on, let's look at the backstory here. They drop points on Sunday thanks to an extremely weird, controversial late call after a game that they dominated. They knock out Chelsea on Tuesday. They put five past Maccabi Haifa on Thursday, and suddenly have to play again on Sunday. It's their fourth game in 8 days. I mean, you know, I think we can all cut Mourinho some slack, I think, on this occasion.
Yes, cutting Mourinho slack, definitely what this show does best. Gab, I hope you caught yesterday's edition of Extra Time. We need a response from Gab, says Don. On yesterday's Extra Time, he was unanimously picked as the worst penalty taker out of the non-footballing pundits. Gab, your thoughts?
Well, who am I up against?
Okay, great question. Who were you up against? I was one of the listed candidates. Dan was on the list. Who else was on the list?
I'm already not having it at this point.
Jules was on the list. Jules came in ahead of you. I think there was somebody else. Adrian, Sid Lowe was in there. Yeah,
I'm surely not having Adrian. Let's not go that far, right? But come on. Seriously, honestly, anytime. Look, Sebi, I know you're modest about your footballing achievements, but I do know you played to a high, albeit non-professional level. I've seen Jules play. That's fine, but come on. I got this over Dan and Adrian. Come on, Adrian, come on.
Shock, it was unanimous. We had Stevie, Frank, and Ale, who all said it would be Gab. Do you want to give Gab some love here? You're on camera with him.
I go Adrian as being the worst. I think Gab has got Adrian beat. I'm not overly convinced by Adrian's coordination, just generally.
Gab, if you want to know what data was used, Frank LeBeau said he saw an episode of the Gab and Jules show where you were wearing shorts, and the cut of your shorts was apparently what sold him.
You know, can I just say, those specific shorts, okay?
Oh, you even know the one.
Yeah, because it's the only one everybody talks about, okay? Those are the exact same shorts that Michael Jordan wore in the ESPN Netflix 10-part docuseries, The Last Dance, which I'm sure you watched because it was mandatory viewing for all of us.
Yes.
The exact same camouflage shorts. Now, I appreciate they may not be to everybody's taste, but there was a global pandemic. We were on lockdown. I don't think anybody watches the Gab and Jewel show to notice what shorts I'm wearing. I'm not making a fashion statement because it's an empty building that we go into.
Right.
And so other than Jules and our producer and a couple security guards, nobody else sees me. So, you know, I appreciate that very, very scientific data that Frank is using. But no, I'm more than happy with those shorts. If they're good enough for Michael Jordan, I think they're good enough for me.
Sure. So in an athletic comparison, Gab, you just made the comparison to Michael Jordan, just so everybody here is...
No, it's a sartorial comparison, not an athletic one.
All right, let's see here. We heard Shaka say some weeks ago that he lived in more than a dozen houses in his time in the UK. With the kind of money in the game now, how do players decide whether to buy or rent, or do they just buy a house every time they switch clubs? Jules, you're tight with Ney and Greasy and all these guys. This seems like a perfect question for you. What do guys do with their houses?
It's a very good question, and I think it differs, obviously, depending the players, depending how much money they earn. You'll be surprised that I think more rent their houses, sometimes very often for a lot of money. You know, we're talking 20, 25, 30,000 a month in rent, instead of buying it, because they think, you know what, I might stay here 2-3 years, there's no point buying a house. Sometimes, depending on the club you play in and the city you live in, it's worth investing because you can keep that house and rent it even once you've left the club, which a lot of them do as well, to be fair. But some just don't want to invest money at all. Some are really good investors, others don't want to invest, don't want to take any risk. It's very, very interesting to see how they spend the money. I know an England international who has a lot of millions on his current account and doesn't want to touch it, doesn't want to invest.
Nice. Oh, you're so close to giving us the name there. You're so close, Jules. You wanted to, I could tell.
I can't do that. Sorry.
Shaka. Go ahead.
I can't name names either, but sometimes when they do buy homes, they put things in there that you might not expect. Mm. Somebody I know purchased a house from a former Arsenal player. And in the basement of the house, weirdly, there was basically, the guy had basically built a barber shop with not one, but two different barber chairs and sinks and whatever else. I mean, let's make this very clear. This wasn't a ladies' vanity room. This was like a guy's barber shop. It even had a little bench where you could sit while you were waiting. He said, you can. I've actually seen this place. I couldn't figure out if, you know, he was running another business on the side or he just liked having his friends over when he cut his hair or what the deal is. So, you know, there's taste for everybody.
Yeah. Who likes to get their hair cut alone nowadays? Shaka, were you more a buy guy or a rent guy? I guess it's kind of an obvious question. You look at your Wikipedia entry and it seems like probably some more rentals were done than purchases, yeah?
No, I actually bought a lot. Strangely, I rented at the very start of my career. I was paying for Reading, wasn't in a whole lot. And then when I joined Newcastle, and pretty much from then, 95 through when I retired, 2006, property prices were always going up. So it made sense. It made more sense to buy because you would get at the very least your money back. It wasn't until that property bubble burst in 2008 that things started to go downhill. And in the end, it was only my very last purchase, which I only just about got my money back. I didn't make anything on it. But other than that, I bought and made money on every one.
And here I was thinking all that money went to the Maserati. What do you know? Gab, your thoughts on the AC Milan versus Rio Ave shootout. 2-2 in the game and then 9-8 after penalties?
I've never seen anything like it. I've seen memorable shootouts. Of course, I've got some very fond memories of shootouts from perhaps like the 2006 World Cup final. But in terms of like the sheer length of it, the drama, obviously I wasn't there. I watched it on television. That weird goal music that they would play out, whatever Rio Ave scored. If you get a chance to watch it with the Milan commentary, it's hilarious because the guy's thoroughly dejected every time Rio Ave score. Donnarumma, like, you know, nearly saving it. Then the other one, he gets a hand to it and it bounces back in. Rio Ave hitting both posts. Those two goalkeepers, Shaka, I know it's not something you did often, but as a goalkeeper, you face penalties. How did they both manage to take penalties like that? Why don't you just put your knee over the ball and just kick it really hard? They're both big, strong men. What was up with that?
I'd like to go back to the first question and choose my choice for who's the worst penalty taker, please. Seb?
Yeah.
I'd like to nominate Gab, please. Put your knee over the ball and do what? Gab, that's all I got onto this.
And blast it over the bar.
Where were we?
Shaka, sorry. I'm... If they're not confident that they can place it, why not just get it on target and hit it really, really hard? If you have so little ability and so little faith in your footballing ability, why attempt that?
Well, first of all, I used to take penalties back in my college days, never did as a pro, but you have that confidence. You know, you feel you could do it. Of course, when you're standing there with everything on the line, it's totally different. So to each their own is all I can come up with.
Right. So we have.
I don't know what else to tell you.
We have the show's worst penalty taker, unanimously voted by his colleagues, asking a goalie for penalty kick advice here on Extra Time. I'm telling you, we're not the worldwide leader.
No, I'm asking him to speak for all goalies everywhere and tell me how it's possible that they would take penalties like that, one after the other.
Jules, let's see if you can answer this question with a straight face, because I don't know if I can read it with a straight face. Will Rashford get the better of Mbappe once again when they meet in the Champions League?
Oh, God.
It's a good joke. Is it a joke for my birthday?
Did we forget to get him a cake too?
No, it's on Sunday. I expect my cake to arrive on the post by the post on Sunday.
Now there's no excuse.
There's no excuse. Although it's a bit short notice, I get that. No, Rashford is not going to get. Rashford never got the best out of Kylian Mbappe. Of course, Kylian Mbappe was disappointing in that second leg. I know the reference. I get it, of course. And Marcus Rashford scored the winning penalty. Well, the penalty that sent United through 2 years ago. I get it. But please, let's not compare Kylian Mbappe and Marcus Rashford. And I love Marcus Rashford. He's a great guy. He's a great player. I do believe, in all objectivity, that Kylian Mbappe is a step above.
Okay. Stevie loves shepherd's pie more than football, submits this question. Who was the player who made you fall in love with football? Gab, you go first.
Oh, goodness. I mean, there's so many, but from going all the way back, since I'm an old-timer, to the first World Cup that I can remember, I would probably go and pick from the World Cup winning Italy side of 1982. I would actually probably pick the goalkeeper, Dino Zoff. Mm. I just love the idea of sort of this grizzled guy commanding the back line in the way he did.
All right. Shaka, you?
No, I don't know if I could say a player made me fall in love with football. I just have always played. But like Gab, kind of going back to the first World Cup that I can remember was 1978 in Argentina. And as good an Argentinian team as that was, Ozzy Ardiles was probably my favorite on that team. And I've not tried to hide the fact that the only time I've ever been starstruck is when I bumped into Mario Kempes when I first arrived at ESPN, and Mario was just casually walking through the hallways. Mario Kempes, this player that I grew up watching in 78, and everything that he did in 78 was just a little bit too much for me to bear. But so I say all that, not that it was any one player per se, but that was my first and probably fondest of memories of growing up watching the game.
Jules, what about you? Was it a player, a coach, who? A team?
Yeah, I had two players growing up. One was Enzo Francescoli when he played in Paris for Matra Racing. The other Paris club at the time, my dad was working for them as well. So Francescoli was so amazing when he went to France and then played for Marseille, of course. And then the other one was Hafez Susic, who was the PSG number 10 in the 80s, who was an incredible playmaker, an incredible number 10. And growing up watching him going to the Parc des Princes, I just was fascinated by his technical ability, the elegance, everything. He was just fantastic. So I would say those two.
Very good. Gab, let's keep this one quick. If Napoli takes points off Juve at the weekend and managed to keep hold of Koulibaly, would you see them as true title contenders?
Short answer, yes. I think they would be true title contenders because of Koulibaly at the back and, of course, for what we've seen so far from the magnificent Victor Osimhen.
All right, another question where our producers have surely helped us make some enemies for Gavin. Jules, which nation in Europe has the worst cuisine? Jules, you handle this one.
Which country in Europe with the worst cuisine, yeah?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Oh, man. I've had a few shocking trips to Belarus, for example, with the national team where it was bad. And no, sorry for all the Belarusian people who are watching us, but that was bad. That was bad.
Gab, you're always critical of food choices, especially when they come from Ale Moreno's wife. What do you think?
I just don't like food that's cooked improperly and done badly. Okay, I absolutely love Prague. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. But the Czech Republic, local cuisine, really doesn't do much for me.
Okay.
But yeah, I just want to specify one thing. If you're talking about, you know, like I live in London, there's many fantastic restaurants here. There's fantastic, you can eat very well in most places in the UK. But if you're talking about local native cuisine, certainly not top of the list. So if we're talking about national cuisine, I would argue probably where I live in England is probably closer to the bottom as far as Europe's concerned.
Okay.
So it's just no disrespect to anybody here.
Okay. England, Czech Republic, Belarus on the Do Not Travel for ESPN FC talent list. Final question, Shaka. This is for your pride. What did you hate more as a goalkeeper, getting chipped or getting a slow bouncing back pass from one of your defenders?
Every goalkeeper hates getting chipped. We hate it, especially in training, because, you know, players wouldn't. If you would do it in a game and you try it in training, fine. But I hated players who would try that in training, try to chip the goalie in training, just to embarrass him, and then get in a game and just drill a ball 30 yards over the crossbar. That used to drive me bonkers. But slow bouncing back passes, you just boot those in the stand, or I did anyway. Is getting chipped. Every keeper hates it.
Very well. All right, Shaka, Jules, Gao, thank you very much for the time. That'll do it for this edition of Extra Time. We'll be back for tomorrow's ESPN FC. Plenty to discuss, big matchups all around Europe.